AW Masters, reel 16.
But in those days, and when you were in barracks, you could also get off daily. You turn 2 in the morning at the proper time. You had to be in...
Well, leave was given.
Leave was given.
That was the point, you see. And, I mean, providing you wasn't required for duty, you could go ashore. And you went ashore and you ticked off... That's ratings below petty officer. They ticked off just the same, you see. And then they had to re-tick in again when they came back. The petty officers carried your own leave book in your own mess. So the only reference for a petty officer or a chief, they simply refer to their mess, the president of the mess who was on duty, and say, is so-and-so available? Are you sure? Okay.
And in that situation, going on leave, you know, getting off ashore, you'd be inspected severely. The men would be inspected before they left to make sure that they...
Definitely would.
They wouldn't just
the
walk out.
The officer of the day, you see, in a place like Chatham again, the roadway is here, the police office would be this side of the road, and he'd be over there. He'd keep his eye lifted, and if people came through, he might appear outside. And it didn't happen very often, because the people themselves just didn't allow it to happen. But I've seen a couple of thousand men go out in an hour, and no fault to find with any of them. They just weren't faulty, you see, because there again, we come right back to the point, everybody took a pride in their own appearance.
Yes. And everyone knew the discipline.
Oh, definitely. They knew what was going to happen, because there'd be no second chance out. And, of course, everybody, they used to carry a card, a station card, as it was called, which got your name and address and details and what have you. And if a person was picked up with that, say, card, without that card, it's no good to going back to the gate again. No, no. You didn't live. You could come back tomorrow morning 9 o'clock and get that. You see, I mean, it sounds possibly silly to the person who's not used to it, but looking at it from the angle where you're dealing with hundreds or possibly thousands of men, you had to have a firm hold. And that was the thing that used to cause quite a lot of heartaches to people, especially called up for the war, for instance, you get mature men coming in who've never experienced that. I mean, to the average person like myself, well, that's okay. You know what to expect, therefore it doesn't happen. But a person who doesn't know what it's going to be, they could be very hurt. They're feeling so, oh, blimey, treated like kids. Well, up to a point, I suppose that's right. But then, if they'd have carried out the regulations in the first place, they wouldn't be in that capacity.
Yes. And apart from the fact that you could be in barracks for training and so on, what duties would you do if you weren't actually on a training course? I mean, you would be doing work, or you wouldn't just...
Well, it just depends what they wanted done, you see. There'd be all sorts of jobs found, even.
Work parties.
If there wasn't, there was a crowd redundant, say. And they had it highly organised. I remember... Oh, many instances I could give you, but it'd be pointless, really, because if you can imagine, for instance, we'll say an admiral suddenly decides he's going to have a look around Chatham Barracks. Right? He simply phones up, or his flag lieutenant would. The admiral would be visiting 11 o'clock. But everything's got to be spick and span, whether it is so now or not. It's got to be done again before 11 o'clock. And I know... I'll give you a specific instance where one lieutenant commander who was there, he was 100% disciplinarian. And not in any oppressive way, but that's my standard and you'll attain it, and that was that. And on this particular occasion, he said to the petty officer who was in charge of the building through which this admiral was coming, this lieutenant commander said to him, he said, how many men can you use? And the man wasn't thinking about it. He said, 120. And he immediately turned to lean seaman. He said, go into our regulating office, 120 men here now. 120 men arrived, and they were on the road outside. And the petty officer who was then in charge knew that he'd got to employ 120. You see, well, it was quite easily done. It was a huge building. So he simply went outside himself, you see. This lieutenant commander stood there. He said, right, you 20 men that bar, you 20 men that bar, you 10 there, you 10 there. Within no time at all, they'd all dispersed. Well, then he went round himself, you see, and specified what he wanted done with the lead man's who was there. The whole job was done. Then, at a given time before this admiral arrived, right, everybody outside, there was a bloke there to see them come outside. In other words, I mean, it sounds silly now looking back at over the years, but discipline is the answer.
And in general terms, food and accommodation in barracks were better than they were at sea because better facilities.
Exactly.
I mean,
you had no heavy weather to deal with, and you had more room, you see, and the whole thing was laid out on a much broader scale.
And I think you said just though this backhanding business didn't go on, occasionally you might find the odd incidents of corruption in barracks over things like wood. You mentioned the business.
Oh, well, you'd always find that. I mean, where we get two humans, one wants what the other bloke's got. And, I mean, not only with that, but you'd get, what would strike anyone as being silly. For instance, there used to be flowers. They had huge gardens there, you see, and they had proper gardeners. And these gardeners were instructed during the season to pick, have so many of these flowers picked, and they could be given to anybody who wanted them for going on leave, you see. So that we say on a Friday afternoon, if people were going home on Friday to Monday, Friday afternoon, there could be, we'll say, 20 bunches of flowers there. Okay. Well, unbeknown to them, there would be a record kept as to who had which. And if a man went down, we'll say this week, and then went down next, he'd say, hop it. And of course, I mean, if they're going to change hands outside for a couple of bob, well, that's that. But then it sounds so petty. But there again, by and large, that was frowned upon because that would be known, you see, and the people were concerned that, oh, sell his flowers a couple of bob. He was immediately a Joseph. They didn't want any more truck with him.
And what about recreation in barracks in those days? Many men would live ashore, obviously, but what about the things that went on?
Well, there was all sorts of facilities. I mean, there was huge playing fields. There was football, cricket, every game, rugby, big gymnasiums. There was recreation rooms. They could read, write, sew, knit, do whatever they wanted. And the gunnery schools would be open. The schools themselves for education, all be available, gymnasiums, there would be, well, anything you wanted to do, and they could cater for the lot. But of course there was a specified time. I mean, if people started, we'll say, at 4:30, you knew that by 6:30 everybody was out. See, because there'd be supper to come and that's that. And, it was routine.
And, you know, in certain cases, concert parties might be organised.
Oh, concert parties would be going.
Dances, perhaps.
Yes, yes. There's all sorts of things. Everything you can think of. Mm-hmm.
What about life ashore in these barrack towns? We talked briefly about the Long Bar and Little Georgie's and some of the pubs. What about life?
Well, I mean, after all, life is what you make it. And a lot of these towns, like an ordinary garrison town, anywhere, there's always a crowd of people, possibly ex-servants themselves in the bygone days, who set up, we'll say, a fish and chip shop or peas and pies or any other sort of shop you can think of. The pubs, of course, would always have their own clientele, but, well, as they do everywhere else. And, of course, some had a reputation for all sorts of things, and oh, you see some most interesting items there. But
such as some things, what?
Well, some of the ladies having fights. Yeah, you get a brand of person in those days. They used to travel around quite a lot. They were like not exactly camp followers, but you get specified women who would do, we'll say, a month in Chatham. Then they'd some of them would go to Portsmouth, and some go to Plymouth, and then Plymouth would come to Chatham. So that they'd float round, see? Well, some of them, of course, they would be known by various personnel, and they'd say, well, so-and-so's up here. And if she was going to embark on somebody else's territory, There's invariably be a fight, and I've seen some of these prostitutes fight like hell. Oh, stand up fights like men. But there again, as I say, that's another phase of the same thing, because quite a lot of these places, they would always have the religious or semi-religious places like Aggie Weston's in Pompey, and these church halls and YMCAs and all that sort of thing. For the people who wanted it, it was quite amazing the number who did.
It
used to go to those places.
How did the sailors take to Aggie Weston's and you? I mean, they regarded it as
it was an asset, by and large. I mean, you always get the people who'd ridicule the thing, but they used to put up, used to have available single rooms, and I forget what the charge was now, I think it was about 18 pence. And I mean, they had their own washing facilities and everything else. Well, if a man had been with, say, to a theatre, or even if he got drunk, if he could turn in there for the night, all well and good. Because, I mean, he could go in there and he'd be in nobody's way. And it would be far, far better for him to be there than to be out with the possibility of being picked up by the patrols. And the was that Indian? Mm. I saw him not by. But as I say, by and large, there was arrangements for everyone. Mm. They were all catered for in their various ways.
Did you get men who, some types of men who preferred other clubs to Aggies because of religion or because of various things?
Well, no. There's always the opposition. You see, Salvation Army, they had places everywhere. And there were other houses and places that used to come along, not as much in opposition, but in competition. Sure,
yeah. Were they different from Aggies in any way, these other ones? Were they a bit less disciplined, perhaps?
Well, it wasn't so much the discipline, you see. The only point about Aggies was you knew that if he was going in there, he was going to be... you could ever go to the counter, tea and buns and that sort of thing, and that was that. But... of course, as time wore on, I believe that the place, like everything else, halted to the point when it became more or less like a commonplace hotel. You know, I mean, there was quite good accommodation and they could serve up a decent meal under good conditions. But, of course, I had nothing to do with Portsmouth after about, when was it, 27, I think.
Mm. Mm. And what you said also, that in these towns the shore patrols could be pretty rough or pretty rigorous anyway.
You had to be.
Yes,
you had to be. 100%. I was in charge of a patrol in Chatham.
Tell me about that. Tell me about that.
And I mean, the regulations were laid down, what you had to do, where you had to be. And you went out in those days as a petty officer in four ratings, you see. And in this particular case, there was these four people there, they were all quite hefty lads, and I was going along one of the streets of Chatham. It was be about 10 o'clock, I suppose, one night. Well, this particular night, anyway. And a woman came running along, and she said, fight by the Navy House. Well, this Navy House was further along the same street, up a side turning, up a small hill. So I said, all right, where we went, we didn't make any charge or anything of that, we was on our way. And we got to the bottom of this hill, and there was this scrap going on halfway up. And two of these ABs just simply looked over their shoulder and said, shall we go? I said, you come on, they go. Of course, they went up, they sailed into this fight, cleared them, had one each side. By the time I got there with the other two, just had a look, and any damage, no. And these two had got up to the top, as I say, by the time I arrived there, I saw these two had been fighting. I said, what's your trouble? Oh, a little argument. So I said, any damage, no. Righto. Get your coats on. They had the jumpers off, naturally. Had a little set to. Righto, there you go, go on, pop it, get going. So when I got back to the patrol office, the chief who sat there, funny thing, I knew his wife by sight, you see. And as I was coming back along this road, standing in the doorway of a pub was this woman. And I just glanced across the road, I thought, oh, mm-hmm. So I got back to the patrol office, it would be about 10 to 11 that night, and the officer in charge was a WO, ex-gunner. By ex, I mean he was a promoted touring gunner, as we called him. And when I went in, I said, so-and-so patrol, correct, everything quiet. And this chief jumped up and he said, I differ. So I looked at him and I said, you differ? In what way? He said, you've had trouble on your beat. I said, I don't think so. I said, you have? I said, well, I saw your wife outside so-and-so pub. I said, has she reported it? And he didn't know what to do or say. So he sat down and again, his face was this colour. And this gunner said to me, he said, you sure what you're saying? I said, absolutely. I said, I went out on patrol in charge, not his wife. He said, are you sure? I said, definitely. I said, I know the woman, she knows me. I said, no, I don't want your wife or anybody else's wife reporting on me. Understand? And what could he say? So this gunner said, well, all right. He said, well, you carry on with supper, he said, and